Welcome to Just a Minute. My name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country, but around the world, but also to welcome to the show four talented, exciting performers who are going to display their way with words, their verbal ingenuity and rapport as they speak on a subject that I give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. And those four are, seated on my right, Paul Merton and Giles Brandreth, and seated on my left, Pauline McGlynn and Graham Norton. Please welcome all four of them. Seated beside me is Sarah Sharp, who's going to help me with the score and blow a whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Radio Theatre in the heart of Broadcasting House. And we're going to begin the show with Graham Norton. Who better, Graham? Oh, this is interesting. The subject is how to outdo the other panellists. You have 60 seconds, as usual, starting now.
By far the easiest way to outdo the other panelists is by heaping praise on our chairman, Nicholas Parsons. Compliment his hair, his jaunty jacket, his colourful tie, and surely, benefit of the doubt will heap upon you and points will be yours. You will be carried from this radio theatre. I'm from Ireland, it's allowed, I'm from Ireland.
That's the way we say it.
Theatre instead of theatre.
No, it was the Irish pronunciation. I think it was quite correct.
So, with the benefit of the doubt.
Oh!
Oh!
And you keep the subject, 40 seconds still available, how to outdo the other panellists, starting now.
I think there you saw a happy demonstration of how to outdo the other panellists.
Paul, challenge.
Deviation. I didn't find it happy at all.
Give Paul a bonus point because we enjoyed the interruption, but Graham, you were interrupted, so you have 35 seconds to continue with how to outdo the other panelists, starting now.
How to outdo the other panelists is to speak when Nicholas says now, but I already said Nicholas.
Paul, challenge.
Repetition of Nicholas.
That's right, you had Nicholas before. Right?
Curse ye gods!
You can't really have too much Nicholas on this show, no.
Do the other panelists.
Benefit of something. Yeah. Benefit in kind.
I'd like to give you the bonus point for that, but I'm far too modest. Therefore, Paul, you had a correct challenge. You have 27 seconds on how to outdo the other panelists, starting now.
It's not easy to outdo the other panelists. Sometimes you can lay verbal tricks. They think you've said something before, and then you find actually it's a trick, and you didn't.
Pauline, challenge.
Repetition of
trick? No, darling, it was trick and tricks.
It's always bothered me, Nicholas. And you know how I am about
you. You haven't played the game as much as the others, and that's one of the clever ways they have of doing it. So, Paul, an incorrect challenge, 18 seconds still available. How to outdo the other panellists, starting now.
Praising Nicholas Parsons is a rather passé way of succeeding at this show. However, I'm going to give it a go, as everybody else. When I look at that beautiful masculine form, I can't help but think of King Kong in that wonderful movie... Nicholas Parsons versus Godzilla.
Giles, challenge.
Repetition of Nicholas.
Yes, and yes. Parsons.
Yeah. Well, give us the benefit of the doubt, then. Like a bit of flattery,
no,
don't you,
there's
girl?
No, you're benefit of the doubt. Girl, it is an obvious, correct challenge. And, Giles, you've got him with 1 second to go. It's one you know friends in the audience. But you have the subject with 1 second on how to outdo the other panellists, starting now.
Being your love child has helped.
So, in this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion, it was Giles Brandreth, so he has 2 points at the end of that round. Paul has 3, Graham has 2, and Pauline has an attempted 1. Pauline, will you begin the next round?
I certainly
will. Oh, lovely subject. Tea. Tell us something about tea in this game. Oh, I think they've got the connection with the character you used to play, but talk on it, 60 seconds, starting now.
Tea is not such an unusual subject for me to speak upon because I once was a tea lady. I like my tea in the builder's variety. I'm not very fond of herbal or fruit teas because I think they always deliver less than they promise. I'm very bad at making tea, even the builder's tea. I make it quite weak.
Oh, poor challenge.
I'd say, oh, I can say it before any builders, wasn't it? Mm. Ah, right. Men, my
dad. You realise what you did wrong. Paul, you challenge.
Repetition of builders.
Builders, yes. So you have tea. You have 41 seconds to talk about it starting now.
It's pretty good for you as a drink. The green variety is even better than the black leaf. But if you are really keen on promoting good health through sipping tea, then I can...
Giles, challenge.
Really good for you, and if you're keen on promoting good health.
Oh.
Repetition of the word good.
Yes. Well listened.
Oh, like it's a game.
Nice one.
You have 31 seconds on tea starting now. Paul Charles.
Hesitation.
Yes. So you have the subject. 29 and a half seconds, Paul, on tea starting now.
It's grown in Japan, China, India, where it's drunk by the Chinese, the Japanese, the Indians. Throughout the world, you'll find grateful citizens coming home towards the end of the evening, looking at their loved ones, reaching for a cup off the mantelpiece, and the two of them getting down the old teapot that was given to them at their ruby wedding anniversary. And they look into each other's eyes as they share a little cup of Darjeeling. Oh, how we dance!
Giles, you challenge.
Repetition of cup.
Once again, you've got him with only 4 seconds to go. Tea starting now.
The Eastern mystic who originated tea tore off his eyelids and threw them into the ground.
So, at the end of that round, Giles Brandith was speaking as a whistle. Wayne gained that extra point. He's now equal with Paul in the lead, 5 points apiece, and Graham comes next, and then Pauline. And Giles, we'd like you to begin the next round. I think this could have been chosen for you. The subject is pretentious vocabulary. And you have 60 seconds, as usual. I should explain to our listeners, Giles has never looked more eager and confident. Instead of the rather tense look he has on his face on occasions, it's all smiles and bonhomie as he goes on pretentious vocabulary starting now.
I suspect this has come about, Nicholas, in a most amusing and delightful way, because once I said to you that a slight inclination of the cranium is as adequate as a spasmodic movement of one optic to an equine quadruped utterly devoid of visionary capacity, when I really meant a nod is as good as a wink to a blind horse, and you said, pretentious vocabulary, mon brave, we don't need any of that on our show, and I replied, in your presence, monsieur, we need to talk in the most remarkable way, because language is power. It's what defines us and differentiates us from the animals whose hands do trail upon the ground. As the great philosopher Bertrand Russell said, no matter how eloquently a dog may bark, he cannot tell you that his parents were poor but honest. A pretentious vocabulary allows this. William Shakespeare had a pretentious vocabulary of 30,000 different words. James Joyce, in just one work, Ulysses, used a comparable number, several of which I hope that you have not yet come across. Oh, my gorgeous chairman. When we speak of the language of vocabulary, pretension, beauty, earnestness, and exotic power, they all come to bear. And tension is a mountain, and here we are, as the minute waltz fades away and the second series begins. The autumn comes upon us, night falls, dusk rises, and we think about our language and its beauty and richness.
Well, Giles Brandreth started with the subject.
I'll be on my way now. Thank you.
He's off.
I'll be on my way now.
And with a little help from the rest of the panel, who got the message which I lent out, let him go. And he went with aplomb and style for 1 minute and 15 seconds. Listeners, the audience here were in on the secret because I took the whistle out of Sarah's mouth when the 60 seconds was up, so that we can have more fun at Giles' expense. So, Giles, you get a point for speaking when the whistle should have gone, and you get another point for not being interrupted, actually. That's what happens in this game. So at the end of that round, you've increased your lead, and nobody else has scored anything in that round. So, Paul, would you take the next round? The subject is accents. Tell us something about accents in this game, starting now.
Many years ago, I saw the wonderful Peter Sellers on the Michael Parkinson show. And in that particular television recording, he did an impression of Alec Guinness from the film Kind Hearts and Coronet. This, of course, is the movie where the aforementioned actor plays 8 different parts. This is the vicar that I am doing now.
The first time I met the other Beatles, I thought to myself, I can't be the drummer because I've already got one.
That also is from the same movie. Accents are very important. When I joined Radio 4 back in 1986, I was told in no uncertain terms, the bins are round the back. And you know, I've never forgotten that advice. I believe it was the great Bertrand Russell himself, the philosopher, who uttered the immortal phrases, I'm sorry.
So Paul Merton started with the subject and kept going for 60 seconds without being interrupted, without hesitation, repetition or deviation, proving that he can do it as well and in a different way, in a different voice actually as well. So at the end of that round, Paul, you are now equal in the lead with Giles Brandreth. And we don't often get two complete rounds of 60 seconds in the same show, but it was a memorable moment in its own way. The audience has gone very quiet. I don't know
why. They want to buy souvenir postcards.
They're very, very afraid now. That's what's wrong.
Graham, they're in awe, actually. Graham, we're back with you to begin.
Let the buzzers begin.
I'm fascinated by why...
This is like normal play resume.
I don't know why this subject's been chosen for you, Graham, but I'm sure you can talk on it. Waxing. 60 seconds, starting now.
I'm a little bit hairy. I mean, not furry like a monkey, but I have had some waxing done. It's really cruel and horrible because it does rip your flesh from bits of your body that aren't normally seen, so why go to that bother? Far easier to turn a light out, I find. Waxing is also very expensive, and usually it's a strange sadomasochistic...
A poor challenge.
It's a bit elongated, this.
It was elongated, yes. But he...
I was stressing the word.
Oh, yes, yeah. He was stressing the word.
Stressing
was elongated.
Stressing it, yeah.
I don't think it was enough to be interpreted as hesitation.
No.
Yeah. Right? So, Paul, you have... I mean, Graham, you have the benefit of the doubt. You have 35 seconds. Waxing is still with you, starting now.
Moons wax as well. Waxing, like something you do at a candle factory. But mainly, waxing is to do with the removal of that stuff that grows on the skin. Which I hadn't said before, I don't think, actually. No. I was searching for one I hadn't.
That was a hesitation.
That was a hesitation, yes. He was running out of things to say. Right, Giles, correct challenge. 23 seconds with you on waxing, starting now.
I come naturally waxed, and that was a problem when hairiness was in. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm glad you stopped him there. Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Like that had to be stopped there.
Yeah.
And then...
That nipped in the bud.
I come naturally waxed.
Yes.
How'd you make that out, then?
Oh, get a life, man. Just cope. Cope.
No.
Cope of you being naturally waxed.
Yeah.
How can, deviation, you can't be naturally waxed.
I am naturally waxed. The point
don't
is...
make him prove it.
Yes. Please. It's ugly enough as it is.
I'm inclined to agree with Paul. You can't be naturally waxed.
Again, let's not push the point. Just let him say it and get on.
No.
Dear Lord.
But it is. It's actually a hormonal thing I'm going to explain.
What, you secrete wax in your body?
It's a hormonal thing.
Can
you
I say to you, can I ask
waxing.
You a straightforward question?
Yes.
Have you got any hair on your body?
No.
Yes, you do. Hey!
My head is not my body.
He's got hair on his head. He's got
my
eyes
hair
eyes.
Is my head is not my body. I've not got hair on my
show
body.
Show us your chest.
Again, your head's not your body.
No!
Show us your chest. Come on. Come on, off. That's
no,
what they want.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Wait, what has happened to Radio 4? In only just a minute, Shannon. Off.
No,
it's a world turned upside down.
I'm
it's exactly the same on Gardner's Question Time.
think if you're not going to physically prove it, even though it is radio, I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to Paul and tell him to carry on with 17 seconds ago on waxing starting now.
Used to be an essential part of the record industry when those particular discs were made of wax. If you think back to the early days of sound recording, it must have been extraordinarily difficult to fix these little waxing cylinders into the machine and try to get the reproduction of Caruso's voice.
So Paul Merton was then speaking as the whistle went and gained that extra point. He's now one ahead of Giles Brandreth. He's a few ahead of Graham Norton, then Pauline McLean in that order. And Pauline, we'd like you to begin the next round. And the subject is junk mail. Tell us something about that in this game, starting now.
When people think about junk mail, they probably consider it to be all of those letters that gather on the carpet inside of the door. Me, not so much so. I think junk mail, I think I've gone out with a few of those. I've lived with them. I've married one or two. Junk mail to me is not the missive that tells you to buy something useless or tries to give you insurance that you really, really don't want. Junk...
It's one of the tricks of just a minute, which is, oh, easy. We often say really, really, and that is repetition in this game. So Paul spotted it first, and you have 37 seconds, Paul, on junk mail starting now.
Junk mail has, of course, increased dramatically over the decades. We now get it electronically. It used to be just substances coming through your letterbox saying, do you want to have the cleanest windows in Norbury? Then join our free monthly offer.
Charles.
A boring leaflet that would have been.
Giles, your hesitation. Yes, I agree with the hesitation. So, Giles, you have 24 seconds, and the subject is junk mail, starting now.
At my prep school, when I first discovered I had a hormonal problem, I used to send off at weekends for communications about this particular ailment. And as a consequence, I received a great deal of junk mail. I then began building Messerschmitts and ships, including the Titanic, and eventually decided that a Chinese boat was what I wanted.
Yes, I think he would have built a model of the Titanic. He won't have built the Titanic. Now, if he had, it would have sunk as well anyway. I know that. Oh, I've ruined the movie for everyone.
I explained that I was sending off for these things, a little baby Messerschmitt and a model of the Titanic.
No, you didn't say a model of the Titanic. You said, I built the Titanic. Sorry.
You did say that.
So you probably don't want to lay claim to that.
Yeah, yeah. There are still insurance
lawsuits,
issues.
Lawsuits pending.
So the benefit of the doubt to Pauline McLean on that.
Oh, my God, what am I talking about? Junk mail? Oh, no.
Wait a minute.
All right.
It's the subject you started with, but you've got it back again. But you've only got 4 seconds, and you start now.
I've always thought that every bit of... He's going to get me on hesitation.
Well, it was a hesitation.
It was a hesitation. Yeah. And I've got to be fair within the rules of just a minute.
It was a Titanic hesitation,
close.
I'd say.
So, Paul, you've got 1.5 seconds on junk mail starting now.
Junk mail says...
So Paul Merton was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point, and he's now gone into the lead ahead of Giles Brandreth, Graham Norton, and Pauline McLean in that order. Giles, we're back with you to begin, and the subject is groupies. Oh. Yes. Will you tell us something about groupies in this game starting now?
Oscar Wilde was plagued by groupies and indeed engaged a secretary to cope with them because people were wanting his autograph and locks of his hair. After a while, one member of his staff died of the cramp and the other went totally bald. I cope with my groupies in this way. I just invite them round and say, come on in and see my natural waxing. Because they're friends, they're on my side. I know that they enjoy what they see and they find once upon a time, of course, I had a chest wig with matching underarm toupees. But now the groupies say to me, I have to admit to you...
Graham, challenge.
Repetition of hair. Repetition of hair, anyone? is this on? Hello, hello, hello. Repetition of hair.
No, he didn't say hair twice.
Yes, he did. He lock of the hair, underarm hair.
Underarm hair. Well,
no, underarm toupees.
He did say underarm toupee.
I spoke with chest wig and underarm toupee.
Right, yeah. You're quite right.
Of course, you know, technically there is no such thing as an underarm toupee, but we were giving
him
the benefit of the doubt.
You're a bit late in challenging on that, aren't you?
I know, but I want him to know that I know. That's the important thing.
So,
I see you, Brandreth.
You have an incorrect challenge. 23 seconds. Still with you, groupies, starting now.
Sadly, my groupies are not beautiful nymphettes, as I would fantasize. They are older men. And most of them seem to have problem with dandruff, and they have open-toed sandals, and they have trousers that are a little bit short for them. These are people who are on day release from certain institutions.
Paul, you've challenged.
He's describing what I'm wearing.
Charles was interrupted, so he has the subject still in a point and 6 seconds on groupies starting now.
My life as a rock star was a brief one, but I have to tell you the groupies that I secured around me were the most exciting and illuminating people that I ever met.
So Charles Brandreth was the end speaker, so Whistle Wen gained an extra point. He's moved forward, but he's one behind Paul Merton, who's still in the lead. Graham Norton follows, and then Pauline McGlynn and Graham. We're back with you to begin. The subject now is a right-hand man, starting now.
A right-hand man is very useful if your own right hand is busy. Presumably, that's where the expression comes from. I can only imagine the complicated scenario in which case this actually became...
Giles, you've challenged.
I'm saving his career.
Are you sure you're in time?
No, we are.
So what is your challenge within the rules of just a minute?
My actual challenge was hesitation.
No, he didn't hesitate. He kept going, giggled away, but he still kept going. So you still have the subject, Graham, and you have 46 seconds.
Tough
a right-hand man starting now.
Everyone needs a right-hand man for those moments when you're busy and you require a supporter.
Giles, challenge.
Hesitation and sexism.
No, we'll give you the hesitation.
Thank you. And you
have the subject of Giles, 39 seconds, a right-hand man starting now.
When fighting a duel, a right-hand man is what you need to be, because a left-handed duelist inevitably is killed in the third act, which is an awful way to go. I loathed it when I had right-hand men, or persons, as I probably called them, because nowadays we are unisex and you cannot have assistance.
Paul, challenge.
Speak for yourself. Deviation, I'm not unisex. Am I, Nick? Don't look so doubtful, Nicholas. I'm not, am I? Is this the one secret that nobody will tell me? I'm not unisex, am I?
Well, I can't speak from personal experience.
But, can you not?
No, but I can know from observation that you are one sex. So, yeah. 18 seconds, Paul, a right-hand man, starting now.
A right-hand man is an invaluable person to help you through the career that is show business. My right-hand man is Nicholas Parsons. He secretly gives me points before the show, which I unwrap and eat in front of the other contestants.
Charles, challenge.
You can't unwrap and eat points in front of the other contestants. It's a flight of fantasy too far, and it's also, if I may say so, deviation. Because to patronise you, Nicholas, to imply that you are anybody's right-hand man when you are the leader, we are your little... We are your humble henchpeople. You see where you're sitting in the centre of the room? Your right-hand man is on your right hand. He's called Paul. He is here as your right-hand man. I'm here as your love child.
Could you put a sock in it for a minute? Giles, 5 seconds. A right-hand man starting now.
A right-hand man is invaluable in the office because...
Paul, challenge.
Well, he's slow in his words now, isn't he? Mm. I mean, it's clearly, you know, the pills are having a side effect, so, you know, it's all over the place. I mean, it was embarrassing, really, wasn't it?
So what's your challenge on the rules of destiny?
Well, a deviation from English language. He's not pronouncing these words. You can't hear them. You can't hear the diction. You can't hear what he's saying.
If I wasn't already on drugs, by the end of tonight, I would be.
Giles, you have another point. You have a right-hand man, and you have 2 seconds to go, starting now.
A right-hand man?
Paul, challenge.
Well, it was hesitation
there.
Yes,
it definitely was. Paul, a right-hand man, 1 second, starting now.
Reggie Cray! Yes!
So Paul was speaking as a whistle when Giles got lots of points in the round. They're both equal. Only 1 point separates the two of them. God, it's been a most exhausting show, this one. Pauline, we'd like you to begin the next round. The complaints department. 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
If you listen to my husband, he will tell you that the complaints department in our house is me. Now, I'd like to dispute that. The complaints department is, in fact, me on this show.
A complaints department is a very useful department to have in any walk of life, because everybody's got complaints, don't they? Nobody's happy with their lot anymore. They're complaining about, well, viruses, swine flu, the recession. I'd like to think, as complaints departments go, you know...
Graham,
humans are very good at it.
Graham, your challenge.
There was a slight hesitation. No, it was a whisper of a hesitation. I think I was listening very carefully, and I think I heard his hesitation.
It was a hesitation.
That you should be the one to do it to me, Graham. Yes. You know?
You I've just... lived here a long time.
Oh, me too, but I'm playing the paddy card here now, and you're not letting
so
me.
Graham,
oh,
so, Graham, you've got a correct challenge. Take over the subject, the complaints department. 28 seconds starting now.
You come home from work, and you work in a complaints... Oh, I said work twice already. How awful.
Correct challenge, Paul, the complaints department, and 25 seconds starting now.
It was on the deck of the Titanic that they located the complaint department officer.
And Charles' challenge.
So was that your last act on this earth?
Well, there was a slight hesitation, and there was also, of course, no complaint department on the deck of the Titanic. I know because I built it.
So which
that was
going to
be
want?
The first complaint. But we didn't get there. System.
So we give you hesitation, Giles. 20 seconds, the complaints department, starting now.
It's the complaints department here at the BBC that I wish to complain about.
Paul Giles.
Oh, BBC, yes. Of course, the old one.
Repetition yeah. of B.
Yes, yes. Indeed.
So Paul spotted it first. He's played the game a bit more often than others. 16 seconds with you, Paul, the complaints department, starting now.
The British Broadcasting Corporation has a massive complaints department. It consists of 15 men and 14 women who answer every single complaint that comes in from the viewers at home as well.
Giles' challenge.
The British Broadcasting Corporation, the viewers, let's hear about the radio. Let's hear about the wires. Let's have some accuracy here. It's not a massive department.
So Giles.
In a way, I mean, I sort of thought we were kind of paying tribute to the medium.
Mm. All right, get on with it.
Paul, oh, there's 1 second left. The complaints department starting now.
Radio!
So, Paul, you were saving your last flourish for the end and got the big round of applause. Let me give you the final situation. Paulie McGlynn, who's only played the game about twice before, came back and did extraordinarily well, but did finish in fourth place. But it was a very brilliant fourth place. And Graham Norton, who was in third place, gained a lot of points, but his contribution was so delightful. Giles, who has never stopped throughout the whole... He did finish, actually, in the end, in second place. He was 4 points behind Paul Merton. So we say this week, Paul, you are our winner. So it only remains for me to say thank you to these four fine players of the game, Paul Merton, Giles Brandreth, Pauline McGlynn and Graham Norton. I thank Sarah Sharp, who's helped me with the score and blown her whistle so elegantly. We are grateful to our producer, Claire Jones. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this amazing game. And we're grateful to this lovely audience here in the Radio Theatre, who cheered us on our way. So from our audience and from me, Nicholas Parsons, thank you, and, of course, from the panel. And tune in again the next time we play Just a Minute! Thank you.